The Breakfast Club.
Adam White, who's back with us on a Thursday morning. Great to have him back. Good morning, Whitey.
Good morning, Daniel. How are you? Sorry, I hadn't put my headphones on.
I could see that. They had to pause to get it over the microphone, the microphone.
What people might not understand, maybe they do, is that we put headphones on when we do our radio show.
We do. Why do we do that?
Because we are talking to a talkback caller on 1300 652 927, mm-hmm. or if we're talking to someone like an interview situation, mm-hmm. we need to be able to hear them.
That's true.
But it's a little bit like when you're growing up, if you're sort of our vintage and older, where you would talk into the tape recorder.
Yes.
And people never wanted to hear the sound of their own voice because it sounded so much different to what they thought it was.
Yes.
Did you have that issue?
Yes.
And you go, oh, I don't want to hear that. That's not my voice.
Yes.
When in fact it was. Because what you hear is different to what it actually is.
That's true. That's true. So headphones are helpful for that.
They are.
Mm. We like them.
That's
often we put them on before we get on.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But I was just a little bit late into the studio.
Why is that? What were you at the back doing?
There's a lot to talk about today.
What were you at the back doing?
No, nothing more than preparing for the show.
Because I know David's been out walking. You sent an earlier
yes.
message through. David's
good morning to David.
Walks at 5:30 every morning.
Yep.
Every morning's out there at 5:30, pounding the pavement. Good on you, Dave. That's fantastic stuff.
So going to my areas.
Well, apart from the timing, yeah. I wonder, in fact, Dave, come back with us, 0416 905052. How long are you out there for? Yeah. How many Ks are you covering?
How many steps?
Or, if he's counting.
Yeah.
He might not be counting.
See, in the 21 weeks prior to the last 5 weeks, I was averaging 7,349 steps a day.
Sorry, okay. Start again.
If I go for the 21 weeks prior to the last 5 weeks.
Right, okay.
I was averaging 7,349 steps a day.
Right.
The last 5 weeks, and I'd argue...
Is this on a spreadsheet? Is this a different sort of early mail spreadsheet?
Sort of technology stuff on a phone.
Spreadsheet, up to date.
The last 5 weeks, data. I've been averaging 12,747 steps a day.
Well, that's 5,000 on 7,000. That's like 70% more.
Yeah, and I'd argue that the sixth week and the seventh week were quite good as well, looking at my bar chart. As I'm really making a conscious effort to not only lose weight, but get myself in tip-top shape for the upcoming cricket season.
Well, correct.
Which will start in less than a month.
Correct.
It's bordering on a pre-season, Daniel. Which I've never done before. It's very unfamiliar.
70%.
Hmm. And it's...
That's an increase. That's a fair increase.
And as you know, I'm doing the 5-2 diet thing again.
Which is unsustainable, but we'll talk
It's working.
About
it. No, it is working.
Well, it is at the moment. Always does.
I was at career high levels only about 6 weeks ago.
Always does.
And I have significantly reduced in size.
If you're fat, you're going to hit the mat.
Exactly. Gary Player is inspiring me.
I didn't know we had that on a hotkey. That's awesome.
I was on the mat, Gary.
Can I just have Gary's feedback again?
Gary, I was on the mat.
Just for those playing at home.
If you're fat, you're going to hit the mat. If you're thin, you're going to win, man.
Pretty good stuff from Gary Player.
Oh, that was very funny. So, today is the last day of a lockdown Melbourne.
It is.
As of 11:59 tonight, all of a sudden, things just go crazy.
If we ever get a racehorse, right?
Yeah.
Or a greyhound, or a trotter, or a pacer, or a harness racer, we should name it 11:59. Because everything is better after 11:59.
Yeah. My wife is 40 next week. I'm thinking as a present of buying her a racehorse, like a very small, sharing one.
Well,
I think that's a good idea.
I had a friend. Who was this? Oh, no, one of my boss at the Blues. He bought his wife.
Craig Williams?
No. He's sort of the biggest boss. And he's basically taken my job.
That's
right. I'm actually... My job is now, it's been made redundant, and Diesel's taken over, which is fine by me. The GM of women's footy at the Blues, he bought his wife a share of Mac and Cheese.
Right.
Who's, of course, with Tony McAvoy, and ran really well at the Valley a couple of starts ago, was going to be running this week, but it's gone a little bit shinny or something. Something's happened. But Mac and Cheese might be all right. So this is not without precedent, what you're suggesting.
Because naturally, I'll get some enjoyment out of the president as well.
Well, naturally. I think it was the system with my man.
But I think it's a good idea. Maybe.
Well, I told you, we could have bought that one with Mitch Beer the other day.
I
sent the message out. I tried to get you involved. So, you missed out on a great opportunity.
David's trying to ring through.
What?
David, sorry, I just cut you off then. David's trying to ring through on 1-300-652-927 to tell us how he's walking.
Frank, have we got lines open? 1-300-652-927.
Keen to know how far he's walking. Yeah, sorry about that. Yeah, so anyway, I don't know why I mentioned that.
Well, no, because I don't know why you did it.
No. Oh, yeah, about the lockdown.
Oh, lockdown, yes.
I'm not sure how it got I'm not sure how we got to the
40th birthday horse present.
So yesterday I walked through the city.
You did? I saw some photos.
Yeah, because I had some time to kill. And I walked from here. So we're at the Haymarket roundabout at the top of Elizabeth Street.
Where the big flag is in the middle of the roundabout.
And I walked all the way down to South Bank.
Can you just have a look outside for a second?
Yeah, it's spectacular.
It's a spectacular morning. If you're in Melbourne town at the moment, get outside. Take your little transistor with you. Because you need to keep listening. I'll put it on the app. It's a spectacular morning.
No, it is. It is.
My goodness, this window. Mm. This is 2 days in a row. This has paid for itself.
So, while you're looking at the sunrise, I could not believe. So, I was down there at 12 o'clock. I actually walked past the Flinders Street station steps at 6 o'clock. And there was not one person inside. Not one person. And I walked across to the, is it the Princess Bridge? I'm not sure. It's the bridge that looks over
the
south.
Yeah, the bridge.
I counted 7 people in all I could see, you know, looking down towards the Yarra and South Bank area. Federation Square, 5 people.
Were you proud of Victorians? 3
of which were security guards.
Were you proud of Victorians for doing the right thing?
I was depressed.
Yeah.
Well, no, not depressed. It was a surreal... I'm being serious. It was a surreal experience to go through the city in what would be rush hour under a normal day, like as in pedestrians getting lunch and whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
23 degrees, no cloud in the sky, and there's just no one anywhere. It was amazing.
Is that the first time you've done that?
Yes, through the lockdown,
through the city, yeah.
Absolutely. I remember doing it... about 6 months ago now, where we were allowed to actually go places. And there was still very quiet the city at that same sort of time. But yeah, yesterday was amazing.
Right. Okay.
Anyway.
I saw the photos. You put a couple on the socials.
Yeah, I did.
For those playing at home, you can check out Whitey's Twitter feed for a bit more information on that. Off the SMS, early doors, Half and Whitey. I've got a runner today at Ballarat in race 2, Celtic Glory, trained by Dan O'Sullivan.
Is it Tomo?
It's Tomo in Ballarat. Now, this is Tomo in Ballarat of Royal Bower fame, and things didn't go too well for Royal Bower. Coming back with a little spell. First up today, looks good each way chance. I'm sure if he hears you mention her on the radio, he'll kill me. Oh, sorry, I didn't read that bit till late, Tomo. Sorry. Can't wait to get back to the track so us owners can stir the trainers up with stupid questions. Well, sooner rather than later, as far as I'm concerned. Tomo, good luck to you. Celtic Glory. And the early markets at tab.com.au. You are $7. Oh, you're in the market. In the market. Simon Wilde's got the favourite. But
in the mix.
It's my word, it's in the mix. My word, each way, all day, says our man Tomo. Good luck to you. We might even see if we can touch base with Dan a little bit later on as part of the early mail. Now, did you know there's people out there walking?
Good.
There's people out there walking. Where Dave, our first SMS early doors, talking about his excellence out there on the pavement, and my understanding is he on the line? No, he's not calling on the line.
He can't. He doesn't seem to ring the right number.
1-300-652-927 is the number to call. Somebody wants to know what the 5-2 diet is, Whitey. Just for those playing at home, a quick summation.
Yeah, so it's a Michael Mosley type initiative that English doctor / TV documentary maker. 5-2 diet is that 5 days you eat normally, and on 2 days are fasting days, where a man would have only 600 calories for the day. So it's almost like a fasting situation. So every Monday and every Wednesday, or every Monday and every Thursday, are my calorie deficient days, where you kind of fast, and then the other days you eat what you like.
But you can choose any day you like.
Yes, they can't be consecutive days. But you choose 2 of 7 where you have just 600 calories. So 600 calories for me is like a bowl of vegetable soup for dinner, or chicken soup, and then like 2 saladas with ham and a piece of fruit will be what I'd eat for the entire day.
I reckon you can do some more research to find out how to get more into that 600. There's a way to get more. Yeah,
but my thought is if I only eat 400 calories, then I'm going even better.
No, I don't think that's right. I don't think that's how it works.
So you get very grumpy and you get very hungry, but it works. I'm telling people it works, and I've done very well in the last 6 weeks.
Now, David, we're very proud of you, by the way, here at the Breakfast Club. David's very proud of you too. He wants to have a walk off with you. You've increased your step rate by 70% in the last 5 weeks. David's out there pounding the pavement at 5:30 every morning. He's giving us a call. Good morning, David.
G'day. How are you going?
Going all right, buddy. Whereabouts are you? Give us a painted picture for us.
I'm in Albury.
Albury.
Yeah, just walking around the neighbourhood. Where I live in a really nice area of Albury.
Nice.
Yeah, lots of cars, bike
paths. Right, eh? What sort of Ks do you do on a morning, Dave? How many steps do you get up to?
So I do 5.5 Ks in the morning, and then when I get home from work, we take the dog for a walk for another 3.5 Ks.
So that's a 9K day, Whitey.
So this is real sort of Jennifer Lopez areas, David, because she does her physical exercise before she eats anything.
Yes.
Yep.
So that, is it working for you?
Yeah, so since I was diagnosed as a diabetic in 2015.
Yep.
And I've lost 5 stone.
5 stone?
So I've just got to keep going or I'll get fat again, I suppose.
That's my concern. As soon as you jump off the wagon, you're down the slippery slope.
Oh, food's like drugs to me.
Yeah.
So I just got to stay away from it.
Oh, that's awesome, David. 5 stone. That's a great achievement. Brilliant.
I've renewed in the last sort of 3 months, and I want to get another 2 stone off.
So a stone's about 6 kilos, isn't it? Is that the old?
Yeah, about that.
A bit over 6. Yeah,
a bit over 6. That's 30 kegs. That's good business. Good business, yeah. Dave.
Now, Dave, before we let you go, have you seen the new Viennetta on a stick?
Oh,
the
don't new do this. Ice
cream. Oh, it looks good.
No, I'm a pie man, mate.
All right. So am I. There you
I'm ex-baker.
All right. Oh, there you go. Ex-baker.
That probably didn't help.
There you go. We've got the baker and the ex-baker and the now ex-baker. As part of the program.
Good stuff.
Yeah, so I understand what you're saying, Dave. My two sisters... I started working at Baker's Delight when they were teenagers, and they used to bring all the bread home that didn't get sold, and that was the end of me.
I worked at Baker's Delight when they had 7 shops in Melbourne.
Wow.
Right.
That's a long
1985.
Time. I've got 7 shops in my suburb now, though.
Yeah, I was manager of one.
Oh, there you go.
Well, good luck to you, Dave. Thanks for calling in, and get out there pounding. Well done. 2 to go, says Dave, but he's doing a hell of a job every morning, 5:30.
Was he walking or was he riding a horse? Same with the noise.
It was a bit of noise there, but that's all right.
That's a great effort.
5:30 every morning. Well done. Well done to Dave. Off the SMS, had a pizza last night, nearly died of poisoning. Survivor. Claiming great courage. Fantastic work. What else have we got? Can we touch on the fact we now get Viennetta on a stick? Somebody...
Yeah, well, there we go.
Oh, that's from Juppy. Let's focus on the days we can eat and aren't grumpy.
Have you seen the Viennetta on a stick?
I have seen the Viennetta on a stick.
It looks good. The fact that it's Coles brand worries me a little bit. The quality of the ice cream probably won't be sort of premium, but I'm prepared to give it a go and check that.
I think you'll find that the quality is just about as good, if not the same, as the other ones. Just put the different sticker on the butt on the top.
No, I'm not sure about that. Ice cream is very important that you get the right one.
I'm not so sure about that.
Mitch Beer texted this last night, tweeted this actually. The dehydration and sleepless nights are a small sacrifice to make for a succulent MSG-filled Chinese meal.
When's Beer and Skittles? Is that Tuesday?
Tuesday.
Tuesdays.
Yeah.
On RSN Central with Gareth Hall. So you get a taste of that.
It's
sort
fantastic,
of,
Mitch, with Gareth.
Flavour with Mitch.
Really good. Really good. Really pleased he's part of the team.
Well, he'll be more pleased if he gets our horse to win. That's what we'll be pleased about. If he doesn't, he'll be hearing about it on Beer and Skittles. There'll be some anonymous texters getting involved with Mitch, if that is the case, if he can't find a winner for the Punters Club Syndicate. But we'll see what we can do for the mighty Mitch Beer. Speaking of Albury, with our man Dave. Matt McBride's not 41. Not even close. Not even close, but he's our NFL guru, former NFL punter, who joins us on a Thursday morning. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, fellas. How we doing?
We're going very well, mate. Are you a Kardashian fan, just by the way?
No.
I'm a bit worried you hesitated there, Matt.
No, it's not a big fan, but they're pretty popular.
Yeah, they are very popular. I told you he wasn't even 41, not even close. Well, he's 42, man, Matty. Not even close. Hey, Matty, there's one team remaining undefeated in the NFL, the Arizona Cardinals. But there's a bit of a situation at the moment with Coach Cliff Kingsbury. Tell us a bit more about what's happening at the Cards.
Yeah, so he's down with COVID. He actually claimed that he didn't even watch the game last week, which was quite bizarre. a lot of the coaches are always, you know, trying to get on to the next game. And the youths are not like, you know, not celebrating wins for very long, but to hear that he actually was watching game film of the next team instead of actually watching, I think he only switched on for the last 3 minutes of the game to basically, you know, watch them get the win. So a little bit bizarre, but they're going well. They're really good. Their quarterback is playing at a very, very high level.
So, I mean, coming into the season, were they expected to be one of the teams to set the game alight, or was this sort of out of the box a little bit?
Yeah, a little out of the box. I think you always expect, like, a young quarterback that, you know, it's got a lot of potential to improve, and they've added some weapons. So, in their case, they somehow, the season before, stole the very talented receiver Hopkins from the Texans, and this year they've gotten AJ Green, who's a veteran, but when he's on, he's one of the best receivers in the league. And now they've just made a trade to Zach Ertz, who's also had a very good career as a tight end, who played for about 9 years, his first 9 years in Philadelphia. So they are gearing up, and they're doing everything right. They're very solid.
Yeah, I mean, they're 6-0 in NFC West and ahead of the Rams, which would, I think, surprise most people at the start of the year. I'm interested, Matt, in mm-hmm. the story at Green Bay with what's happening there. Aaron Rodgers, you know, looked like he wasn't even going to play for the team. They lost an early game, and here we go. And then all of a sudden, they're 5-1, yep. and Aaron was brilliant against the Bears.
Yep, he's just that good. They've got a good team around him, and there's been talk that they're trying to trade up to get some. He can make some in season trades at the moment. Give him some more weapons. It's par for the course. When you've got a brilliant quarterback, you want to surround him with the very best talented talent there is. And he's got a great receiver in Adams, Devontae Adams. But they could always use a bit more help. And I think they'll have a pretty good run in with their division. They'll normally both the Bears. And the Lions, normally down the bottom of the ladder. And Vikings are going to hang around. They might be a chance for a wild card. But they should come through with the division title. And then we'll see. With Rodgers, you never really, you can't really count him out. He's a bit like Brady in that regard.
Yeah, and you look at the NFC where you've got the Packers with Rodgers, you've got obviously the Bucks with Brady. Like it's, and then you go down, and there are other teams that might be surprising as well. Even the Cowboys. So from what we've seen in the first sort of 6 weeks of the season, we're seeing some really good football being played.
Yeah, no, there's some standout teams now. Thank you for mentioning my Cowboys. I think they're playing very well. They've got the bye this week, which is quite a nice break after a close overtime game victory last week against Patriots. So they look very good, and they've got great balance back throwing the ball as well as any quarterback, and then they've got the two who are doing a good job in rotating
And so I think that they're right up there. Obviously, the Bucks in the NFC as well as the Packers and the Rams. So, and of course, you know, with the Cardinals being undefeated. So yeah, there's some standout teams right now, and there's probably 10 teams that are probably still a big chance of winning it all. I'd say it's probably down to that, and out of the 32 that are you put your money on.
Great to have you back with us through the spring. Dr. Turf, good morning to you.
Half, Whitey. I don't think the cock plate's hyphenated, by the way. yes, nice to be here. And always an exciting race, the plate.
My word. Are you excited about this edition?
It's an interesting edition.
Well, there's a pause there.
It's an interesting edition. Like, I think you can make a case for and against virtually every runner. A couple of unknowns, of course, with Europeans and the two of the three favourites, maybe coming off, you know, interesting runs, you know, in Zaki and Very Elegant, probably not at their best at their previous start. So there's a bit of intrigue about the race.
That makes it a bit of fun, doesn't it?
I know we're talking to the Babe, of course, who rode the 79. Well, he rode a few Cox Plate winners, but Dulcifying 79 was one that stuck out in my mind.
Why? We'll get to that later. Why? It's all right.
Yeah, but just as a an aside, I think I'm right in remembering on the day there was when we were kids. One of the books that all schoolboys read was a book called Reach for the Sky, which was the story of an English pilot who lost his legs, was given tin legs, and then fought in the war.
Right.
And his name was Douglas Bader or Bader. Made a movie of it. It was one of those famous English sort of war movies.
Yep.
And he was at that Cox Plate in 1979.
Right.
So, and I'm sure I met him, but I don't really remember. You know, it was so long ago. But I'm just that. I'm saying idolized.
Was he a big
a
fan
kid.
Of you at the time?
Did he take your numbers in the quote?
I just too many. I don't really remember. But you know, he was such an icon for young fellas back in the day. It was such a famous book.
You think if you lost your legs in the war, you'd just put up your hand and say, that's it for me. I'm out.
Well, no, he just...
He lost them, did he lose the bike before the war or in the war?
No. I think he got shot down as well. And, you know, seriously, like it was one of those amazing boys' own books, you know, that I read when I was a kid. And got to see him at the Cox Plate, that same Cox Plate that...
Was he British?
Yes, it was a pump.
British version of Ben Simmons for us here.
He's a big punter fan, he was. He loved to see the Doc in action.
He was, I'm just trying to think who played him in that movie. It was one of those famous English black and white war movies, you know, in the 60s
So every boy read that? Is that what you're telling me?
I reckon every kid my age, you know, read Reach for the Sky.
I want to know off the SMS, 0416 90 50 52, if you are of Turf's age, and there's probably not many left, let's be honest. did you read Reach for the Stars? Reach for the Sky.
Douglas Bader, his name was. And he was probably played by, you know, one of those famous English actors as well, whose name... I can't remember either. Look it up. I probably should have looked it up. But
Have you had a glass of milk today?
I've had a coffee on the way in.
Well, you need some more milk, because new research led by the University of Melbourne at Austin Health has found elderly adults...
Yeah, right.
...who eat 3.5 serves of dairy daily have a 33% lower chance of any type of fracture, a 46% lower risk of hip fractures, and 11% reduction in falls, Turf.
Falls.
You're getting into that sort of time of life. I'm concerned about you. Just keep the dairy up if you can.
What is that benchmark age where it goes from I fell over to I had a fall?
Yeah, that's right.
There is a benchmark age where the description alters.
I think it's 70.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. I think it's 70.
Is it?
Yeah, and usually in a nursing home where you get the phone
right,
call.
Right,
that means it, dairy, that's good. So that means that is Viennetta on a stick. they're healthy. They're good for you.
Good for you.
I'm going to look it up while I'm talking.
Kenneth Moore.
There you go. Famous English actor.
He's your man.
That played all those sorts of roles.
Joe from Box Hill knew that.
Good on you, Joe. Thanks for that.
Oh, good luck, Joe. Well done. He was shot down and captured and made a prisoner of war.
There you go. Well, I forgot all of that.
He escaped so many times, says somebody off the SMS. Stand by before I get to the end of this message. The Germans took his legs off him. So,
well, that's one.
That's a story.
He was a good rugby player from another SMS as well.
Hard to tackle.
Well, probably before the league.
Yeah, what's that old English? You know, there's that old joke about the bloke who lost his legs in an accident, and he was given wooden legs, and he got a job as a night watchman in a factory. And the family got a phone call one night saying, "You better come down. The factory's on fire." So they went down there, and the fire chief said, "Look, we've saved the factory, but your uncle's burnt to the ground." Sorry, what? Well, just... Never heard that joke.
I've never heard that joke.
Yeah, probably for good reason.
I've never heard that joke. Yes, good morning to all.
There's an old English comedian named Jethro, who I think's retired, and when you look at him on YouTube and stuff...
Drinks a lot of milk.
He does stuff that you're probably not kosher these days.
Oh, there's not much that's kosher these days.
But he was very funny by the same token.
Yes.
And it was one of his jokes.
Right. How did we get the Ben Simmons before with the magic legs?
So what's happened there?
Well, he's got seems to have the same sort of heart, doesn't he?
What?
Well, he just doesn't want to get involved with the team he plays for and... Training with his mobile phone.
That was horrible yesterday, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because remember, you were talking just momentarily about Aaron Rodgers, who seemed to be wanting out of the Packers big time, played the first game. They got flogged in the first game of the season. But he's just put on a clinic since
then.
Well,
it was debated that he might even turn up again after round one because he was seemed so disinterested. Well, haven't lost since.
Yeah, no one had no idea what to expect from the Packers in game two. But wow, he's back in that Super Bowl winning form of his.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he must be 15 years in now.
Yeah, Rodgers. He's getting to that point. Yeah,
what a career he's had.
There's a lot of SMSs coming in saying that they read that book.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it was almost compulsory reading, back in the day for young boys.
Wasn't on the curriculum, was it? The
As
school book
to
list.
Man. Sorry?
Wasn't on the school book list at the start
no,
of the year, was it?
No, it wasn't, but it was just a famous war book, English book. No. I'm not saying I've still got it, but I still remember reading it and how popular it was. And there he was at the Cox Plate in 1979.
What was his name?
Sir Douglas Bader.
Who's
B-A-D-E-R.
Who'd be the most famous person you've ever met?
Without a word of a lie, George Bush.
Right.
Senior.
How did that happen?
Well, I was with, on a family holiday, and I was with my wife.
Vanilla trots one night.
Yeah, that's right. I was in Singapore, on route somewhere, and when we arrived at the airport, there was sort of army lining the roads everywhere, and it turned out there was some sort of huge conference on in Singapore, world leaders. But we didn't know that at the time, and we arrived at the hotel and went, go for a dip just to, clean up and everything, and caught the wrong lift. Basically got on the goods lift instead of the other, we're sort of a bit lost. And the lift doors opened, and this arm came across and said, "Wait there." So my wife and I, in our bathers, are standing in this lift, and around the corner, first of all, came Barbara.
Oh, yes.
And then following on was George. And he saw my wife and I in the lift in our togs and walked over and said, "Hi there, how are you doing?" And shook our hands.
Did he?
Went the shake. And he was the president of the US at the time. And the very next day, gained some sort of notoriety by vomiting on the Japanese Prime Minister. At this particular conference. He did. Yeah. He had some sort of food poisoning or whatever. And it's an unusual expression, to vomit on the Japanese Prime Minister. That is a hand in my heart, 100% true story.
Is there any suggestion that was a direct reaction to seeing you in your togs?
It's possible. It's possible, Daniel. Maybe he'd been to Big Short's Bar and Grill in Greensboro.
It's opening up, Friday again.
I bet it is.
For 20 patrons, go and see Mabel Jones.
When's the last time you worked behind the counter there?
Well, last time it was open was about 20 months ago, so it was a while before that.
Wow, yeah.
So we're like, yeah, go and see Mabel. So, give her a visit, 67 Griffith Street.
And that was quite a famous incident when he lost his breakfast or dinner. but anyway, so that's, I would say he was the most famous person. Not that I did meet him, I suppose, but.
Well, you did, you shook his hand.
Yeah, shook his hand.
That's officially a meeting.
Hardly had a chin wag, but. Hi there, how you doing? And I thought it was his grandmother. But,
poor old Babs.
Well,
poor old Barbara. Such a very, very loyal person.
Righto.
Supportive person.
Why did you mention the dairy thing?
Just because Turfy's old.
It was an age thing.
It was an age gag. I saw that this morning and I thought, dairy's important.
Did you see that the Queen's been sort of under a bit of pressure?
What's happened to Lizzie?
No, because the Queen's minders have told her that she can't drink her martini every night.
Really?
That she's getting a bit old or that it might not be particularly healthy. Have you ever seen a more healthy looking and sounding 95 year old?
I'm not a royalist by any stretch, but she is a remarkable woman. She seriously is. There's a bit of longevity in that crew, isn't there? Yes. Philip, how old was he?
Well, Philip was 98.
He was shooting quail up till he was at 98. And the Queen Mother, was she
100 and something?
Was she?
I think so, yeah.
She got to 100. Yeah, she was batting well. He was 99, Prince Philip, when he passed earlier this year. And the Queen Mother, I'll find out for that for you. I'll find out that. She's been asked to step down for a couple of days, I've just been told, two out the back. That's a brave person telling the Queen to just have a sit after all these years. Just sit this one out, love.
It'd be the same person that told her that she's got to stop drinking.
Martinis. Well, the Queen Mother, of course, was very fond of gin.
101 Queen Mother got to.
Van Ingham. Okay, it's good age.
They're going well. The palace life's good.
It's not exactly sort of a grueling existence, is it?
Well, I don't know. I reckon they do a lot of stuff. A lot of functions. Oh,
a lot of opening, a lot of cutting of ribbons.
A
taxing
quail shooting isn't easy, Turf.
Who?
Quail shooting.
No.
It's not easy. I reckon they work pretty hard, the royals. Mm. They're out there. They're out there doing their thing.
Yeah.
Come on, Turf.
It's $10 million a year to open a building.
Well, I didn't say it wasn't worthwhile, but I reckon they're on the horse a bit. Because, of course, William and Kate are doing the majority of all this sort of stuff.
I try not to follow the royal, fracas and the family issues between the... It's a bit
sad. Well, it's hard keeping up, Turf.
Yeah, well, you just follow whatever Piers Morgan's got to say about it, don't you? And assume his position.
Now, tell me yesterday, Turf, Charlie Rose won the Geelong Cup. Yeah. Is Charlie Rose a contender in the Melbourne Cup?
I wouldn't have thought so, but she's a terrific mare, and they've done a great job with her. And she puts herself on pace, and she's always hard to beat in her races. And she did a great job. She had a good preparation, and she'd be cherry ripe for the big one. But what a great track that was yesterday. I know I go on about this, and I did last
week. Well, this is why he's here. He loves this man, James Dalton, who sets the track up there.
We are blessed. And when you look at some of those Sydney tracks, those poor blokes got to put up with punting on those Sydney tracks. They can have their Everest, but any danger of throwing some money into an infrastructure there on a racetrack in Sydney? That's enough.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the Everest, the Manikato has been affected by that.
Oh, yeah.
There's been a lot of conversation.
Yeah, there's
about
an
that.
Issue
even,
now.
Even Michael Brow mentioned this on Racing Pulse or the Barrier Draw the other day at Moonee Valley. Like, there's admission from everyone now that it's affecting things.
Well, it's certainly affected. I'm sure. In fact, I think I read that turnover last Saturday was through the roof.
Yeah, it was.
And I'm sure this is the fact that Melbourne and Sydney combined have got a huge race day with the Caulfield Cup and the Everest on the same day. And there's some disappointments for me in that you're not going to have the top Sydney jockeys in Melbourne and the Sydney horses stay up there and for races like that. And the what's that race next? The Derby? Golden Eagle, is it? I still think there's some fine tuning that needs to be done because there is a downside to the whole thing. And worth noting also that some of the other Sydney money that has been thrown at some races has been the greatest slaughter of cash in the history of racing. Well, you look at the Hill Stakes, you know, that's just a farce what he's doing with some of those, trying to keep horses away from the Turnbull. And,
yeah,
you know, it needs to be pointed out that some of the stuff he's doing is a clumsy failure.
Yeah. See, I'm interested, we were talking to Mark Waugh yesterday on RSN Central, and we were talking about the Caulfield Cup and also the Everest on the same day, and Mark was pretty flat that it was on the same day because he loves the Caulfield Cup as much as, you know, he's enjoying the Everest. But he was saying that in Sydney, no one's talking about the Caulfield Cup. It was all about the Everest. Mm. Whereas down here,
you know,
we do talk about the Everest.
Yeah, we do. Well, actually, a little bit too much probably. But, I mean, obviously a lot of that coverage, particularly in the Sydney newspapers, was paid for.
Yes.
So, you know, there is that. There was a story, definitely a story going around a couple of years ago that Sky presenters were instructed not to talk about the Caulfield Cup. Now, whether that was...
That was a story at the time, yeah.
That was a story at the time. So you'd hate to think that that sort of pettiness had, you know, been an instruction from, you know, those in power up north.
Yeah. See, I'm interested in what you thought of Incentivise, of all the races that you've watched over time and, you know, the comparisons potentially between someone like a Might and Power and an Incentivise, the field that Incentivise beat. From what you saw on Saturday, where does this horse potentially compare
good
with
question.
Others?
I said to you last week, the Turnbull won me over. I mean, he was the real deal after what he did, I thought, in the Turnbull. I mean, he look, was it the best cup field? You know, that's debatable last week, but he flogged them. You know, everything he did, his sectionals, everything was a dominant performance. He would have beaten any field they put up against him last week. I thought he was fantastic. You know, he'd copped that penalty. I know it wasn't, you know, he still only had 55 or whatever it was, but he annihilated that field as pure and simple. So I think he's capable of anything, really. I mean, it'll be a different kettle of fish at Flemington in that there will be international runners, some international runners, so it'll be a different feel to what he took on at Caulfield, and he's got an extra kilo and a half, which was exactly right, I would say. He's won me over. He's a star.
Right.
He is a fair dinkum star.
So we heard, spoke to Richo the other day on Breakfast
with
the
Beast.
Yeah, Shawnee Head. He was talking about, we threw him the question about the lack of internationals this year and whether or not it franks it makes it a better performance or a less than stellar performance because there's no real international competition for Incentivise this time around. What camp do you sit in? Do you need internationals to make it a great race and the performance great, or are you happy with the local scene?
Well, you're asking for me to put myself in here.
Richard, I was saying, just for reference, he was saying without the internationals, it's a great performance and it's a really nice Caulfield Cup and all sort of stuff. But without these internationals and their form lines, it takes away a little bit of the gloss.
I think that is true. And really, you know, I'm just speaking as a punter. I mean, the standard of our stays is not strong. And look, I mean, I grew up and loved the Melbourne, and still love the Melbourne Cup, and it was my favourite race and my favourite day of the year. You didn't know any better, though. You didn't. I mean, the only horses you didn't know about were the Kiwis coming over.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm talking about, obviously, 20-odd years ago and beyond, but, you know, I'll go back in racing a while, and it was such a fantastic race and an iconic, egalitarian sort of race, and it was Australia's best days and the queries from New Zealand. But I think we've been exposed to just the standard of what our stayers are. And I don't think that's ever going to change, by the way. I mean, you can send Melbourne Cup winners to stud and so forth, but that doesn't mean anything, really. You know, they're probably not going to be great stallions, A, and B, who's going to send a decent broodmare to them? We're geared for speed here. That's our shtick here in Australian horse racing. And I'm not undermining the cup for one second, but I think if it was just for Australian and New Zealand bred horses, you know, I don't know where it would sit. Mm. I mean, back in the day, it was number one, but I don't think it'd ever sort of be considered like that anymore. So I do think you need that mix of...
It legitimises our horses if they can compete against the best international horses.
Yeah, yeah. But do you want 17 of them in the,
no,
in the field?
No, I don't think you do.
So I don't know what the balance is. You know.
Well, we're buying more as well, too, as ownership groups and syndicators are buying more of these overseas ones and bring them here for this reason because the cash is so good.
I mean, you look
so
at,
we're seeing a lot, yes, of them as locals in the,
yeah,
end anyway.
Yep.
Yeah. You wonder where we'd be. Really, when you look at, you could pull out a race field from Flemington in May in the 2,500-metre staying race there, and probably 8 of the 10 were internationals.
We did this the other day with Dino on the Friday form. It was one of the, I can't remember which race it was, but it was 2,400 or so.
Yeah.
And two of the 14 were Australia or New Zealand, yeah, suffixes.
So where would you be? Where would you be? Where would you be? Our race, you know, it's almost like, do you just abandon? I'm not saying, I'm just, you know.
No, because I've got a derby contender.
Where would you be? We're just sprint racing. I mean, we are 1,200 to 1,000 metres to 2,000 metre racing. You know, the staying races on the day are always the least interesting and the least depth in them. You know, we're struggling for numbers during the year, even with most of the stay. Yeah, occasionally you get your bigger fields, but often they're racing on the Saturday with 7 or 8 horses. But that's just... That's our racing.
But interestingly,
that is our racing.
That's where the money is. All,
yeah,
the staying,
I was
races.
Say exactly that. It's still good money, to be honest.
His work has been superb Saturday, and his work was superb yesterday at the Valley. That combined with James McDonald back in the plate, you know, he's the best jockey in Australia, and he's prepared to go and spend a week in isolation to ride my horse.
That's a pretty good endorsement, I reckon. That's the voice of Annabelle Neesham speaking about James McDonald, who'll be taking the sit on Zaki in the WS Cox Plate on Saturday, having to go through 7 days of isolation to do it. Turf. She's got two in the race, Annabelle. She's going gangbusters. Monga
as well.
Is the other one?
Yeah. And, well, Zaki's sort of obviously a last start failure at Caulfield, just like Dulcify was before he won the Cox Plate by seven lengths.
That's your favourite.
It is funny, Caulfield, how it's been the graveyard for some champions. They handle every course, but Caulfield's one that they can't. And most famously, Kingston Town, I reckon. So you think I've beaten there?
So you're not too distressed about Zaki's last start failure?
Distress. I haven't lost any sleep over it. well, yeah, you've got to... You know, every horse puts in a bad one. Every, you know, as a refined athlete like yourself,
correct.
You probably put the odd short one in.
Wow, there was once. There was one.
So, you know, it's not ideal, but, you know, they're not machines.
Well, but that's what the punters.
You're asking me to want to cop 280 about him? Not really.
No. Well, there you go. That was my next question. You're copping 280?
No.
Not on the back of that?
No.
Righto.
I don't mind having a bet. I don't know if you're aware of that. But I can't convince myself of a horse I want to back in the Cox Plate.
Right. It's got to that point.
Yeah. I mean, I like the fact that Very Elegant has drawn 9 because I think that suits her having to go back and there's going to be a bit of rain. It'll be race 17, if you like, in a day and a bit. So what's it going to be like?
What's the millage for the coming days?
15, 20, I think.
Well, up to 10 on Friday and Saturday. So
it probably puts 6 or 7 on the track anyway, so it's only plus 10.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. The thing with Mooney Valley is you're talking about tracks. I mean, we know that it can take rain.
Yeah, yeah. But I can't convince myself to back her either. I mean, isn't it funny? If you had a debate about is she a champion, if you want to throw that expression out there, that well-worn one, nine-time Group 1 winner?
Yep.
There's still a, you know, like...
Why is that, do you think?
I don't know. She never puts them away.
But she never really runs a bad race either.
Neither. You know, and she knows, I mean, she knows where the finishing line is.
That's all you need to do.
Yeah, she's got a tremendous... I mean, you know, if they're head-to-head, she normally wins, don't they? Doesn't she? So I can't convince myself to back her. You know, Animo's just... Does he go forward on Animo from that awkward draw? I suppose so.
You'd be posy handy, wouldn't you?
So with the three-year-olds, Animo and Captivant, I don't know. It's a intriguing race.
Well, that's fun. I like races that are intriguing. There shouldn't be a clear-cut WS Cox Plate winner, should there?
I must say, of all the, you know, obviously being in the racing meeting, having the pass and so forth, but standing down near where the horses come back, where I think I've watched 25 Cox Plates from, on the ground level, down by the scales, is one of the great experiences. And I suspect it's just as good up in the stands. You know, it's a great... I hope when they rejig the valley that they design it in such a way, and I'm sure they'll keep that in mind, that that atmosphere, that amphitheatre atmosphere is... replicated.
Somehow replicated, yeah.
It's one of those great... You don't get it at Caulfield or Flemington, but you get it at the Valley.
Well, you're right there, aren't you?
You are right there. Right, you know.
Well, it's because we've talked about this a number of times, Half. It's because when because the mounting yard's out the back, the horses come through the tunnel and then come straight out onto the track. So there's that drum, and they usually have that music that plays as well.
Yeah, Daryl.
No. They have this. Well, I don't know whether they even have it anymore. The
Brownlow sort of
music.
Stuff.
Yeah, it's sort of a bit like that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sing it, but I know it. But it just, you get it's spine tingling because it always signifies they're ready to race as they go through the tunnel and the crowd's on top of them.
And it's really the only track, I think it's the only track in Australia that has that proximity, that, you know, immediacy for the crowd. They're actually sort of part of the pre-parade, and that noise up the straight the first time and then in the home straight is spine-chilling.
It is going to be a great day, no doubt. All the action, of course, on RSN 927 through the weekend, and more discussion about that through the next couple of days. I'm an anemoman, I think.
I beg your pardon?
An anemoman.
Anemoman.
I think I'm an
anemoman. I think you want to hyphenate that too.
Kevin Sheehan is the voice of the next generation talent. He's the AFL talent manager, national talent manager, draft guru, and we need to find out what's happening in a couple of weeks' time with this draft that's coming through for the AFL, and he joins us. Shifter, good morning.
Good morning, Half. Great to be with you again, and to audio Dr. Turf. A great time of the year for us.
It is, Shifter. Hey, how difficult it has been for, obviously, the clubs, but particularly the players, how little footy has been played by kids over the last 2 years.
Very tough on them. Victorian boys, they've actually averaged they played about 10 or 12 games this year, but none last year. So an average of about six over 2 years. So you haven't seen them evolve as you would normally. So a fair bit of, crystal balling, really trying to project ahead as to how they might turn out to be as players. And there's got to be errors there. It's like running the Cox Plate without the leading races. You know, you guess a little bit, and it's a lot more gut feel than ever. And even our testing we've had recently, looking at some results here now across the board, we finished our testing in WA at the weekend. SA was on the Saturday as well. So compared to Bendigo, the boys from Vic Country, it was pouring rain up in Bendigo at the athletics track, so they ran the 20 metres on the concrete. There's no spring in concrete. And so some of those times end up top 10s on the concrete. Geez, you could take half a second or more off that for their times when you look at elite speed. So all that's got to be taken into account. No national championships involving the Vics against SAWA, which is normally a great proving ground for the kids with their footy performance. We snuck in one game between Vic Metro and Country before lockdown in July. It was a challenge match. The championships were due to be on a little bit later on, so that'll be a point of reference game for the Vics at least. But SA got to play four matches, three against WA as well as one against the Allies. So they've been cited at least at a representative level, but not against the Vics, which is the real proving ground. So all those mean it's a challenge for the recruiters, but also a challenge for all those boys, as you point out, that haven't been able to do what they do well, and let's play footy in front of the very interested observers.
Yeah, so Shifter, I've got two questions for you. The first one is, was there a temptation to play the championships, say, in November when things start to open up, to give clubs a better understanding ahead of the draft?
Well, the problem, one, is that most of the boys, the majority of the boys are doing Year 12. The Victorian boys are. The boys from SAWA, some of those are through to uni because they start their schooling a wee bit earlier. So it was just impractical to do much at that point. And you need to keep in training through exam period. If the exam's finished by the 14th of November, well, you would have had probably 3 months without playing and trying to train through. You know, it just wouldn't be practical in the finish. We're still hoping to have a training session in, as we did last year, after exams are over, but a light touch session, just to remind the clubs of the shape type of the Victorian boys that that have missed. Even the Metro boys missed their combine. It was due to be on a couple of weeks back, but then too difficult to deliver. So they have what's called a Strava test, where they you're using the iPhone and you're using an app on the iPhone that will time your 2K-er. So there are different athletic tracks all over Melbourne over a weekend, just about doing it a solo.
Yeah.
Or in pairs, they had a pacer or whatever. So that's all got to be taken into account when you look at those results, that the degree of difficulty so hard on some of these boys.
So the other question was that, and we've had a lot of correspondence from our listeners sort of saying, well, there might be a Richmond fan where they've got this cluster of picks in the 20s or, you know, say Melbourne's first pick obviously isn't going to be later. Do you think this is the year that you can potentially get what would otherwise be a top 10 pick at 28 because the form's not exposed? Or do you think the clubs have actually done their work and they're pretty confident that 10 would be the 10 in any other year?
No, I think you're right. There's going to be some absolute rooters bob up later on. Each year, I have fun doing it. I've put out a 40, but it's not for a couple more weeks, but I'm going through it. There's 60 boys here I really like. Of the 126, we've ended up testing right across Australia. So I've gone through profile of the whole 126 and getting back to trying to come up with a 40. Yeah, there's some rippers. And everyone's got a slightly different view. Your sample size is small. You dominated that country metro game. That was, you know, whoever he is. That might have been just one game. Normally you'd see them four times. And the ability to back it up, like Petrarca did. He won the Lark medal back in his day, being the best and fairest in the four games that Vic Metro play. Sam Walsh won the Lark medal, same thing, backed it up week after week. They're the bulletproof ones that we think will go through and become stars of the game, but we haven't had that that background. We haven't seen them in their 17th year as well as the lead into this, their 18th year, their draft year. So, yeah, I reckon there'll be some rippers. This will be that draft where you've got great players that might normally be top 10s that have slipped through and you've got them somewhere in the 20s, maybe even the 30s. Because there's some unknowns there.
At the 400, Dulcify shot away 2.5 lengths imposing. Then Shivery under the whip from Arbra Shane and Gypsy Kingdom. But Dulcify well clear. Brent Thompson going for his fourth Cox plate. And he's got it. He's home, Dulcify. He's 6 lengths in front of Shivery and then Arbra Shane imposing, stopping. Dulcify's won by a minute. And that's the way he might win the Melbourne Cup. Dulcify by...
What a call. The great Bill Collins. Dulcify's won by a minute. And it was 1979, the Cox plate. And this is Doc's favourite Cox plate, and Dulcify being the winner, absolutely convincingly, in that period of time, in that famous Cox plate. We are heading up the Cox plate weekend this weekend, of course, and you heard Bill talk about Brent Thompson winning his fourth Cox plate. It was his third in a row, fourth in 5 years. It was some sort of little period for the Babe, who joins us this morning on the Breakfast Club. Good morning, Brent.
Morning, Daniel. Morning, Adam, and Dr. Turf, of course. It's always wonderful to hear that call of Bill Collins. He made many fantastic race calls, and that was one of them.
We even heard on that call there, Babe, the noise. Do you remember, obviously, as a jockey, you feel the noise?
Yeah, well, you know, we what crowds were in those times, certainly, but, you know, like any given Saturday was at least 30,000 people, so... And of course, I think they use the middle as well. But yeah, you could always hear that sort of crowd. I mean, I don't think there was any inside, vision there for me to turn around and look at myself. But I didn't need to.
Well, of course, there was a huge crowd on the infield as well. But he was a remarkable horse, Dulcify, a remarkable career in that he's in the history books as winning on debut at 300-1.
And 300-1.
300-1. I think Tony McAvoy tells the story because I think he'd gone to the trials and flipped over or something like that. So he never trialled. I think Hayes may have had three or four in this maiden on debut, and he went around 300-1. And two starts after that, he won the South Australian Derby, so which in those days I think was run prior to the Victoria Derby in October.
Yes,
a freakish sort of horse. And his four-year-old year, which, of course, was that year that he won the Cox Plate, that's, I mean, you rode him in every start that career, Babe, and bar the Underwood failure, it was an astonishing campaign.
Yeah, Yes, well, he came to Melbourne, and that was the first time I actually sat on his back was on Cox Plate Day itself as a three-year-old prior to his run, and which he won the Derby the following Saturday. I think he ran second or third. What would probably be the Waterford Mile now? I know those races have changed with various over the various years it was probably that race in this day and age, and it gave me a great feel. So I was fairly confident of him winning the Derby in itself. But yes, and then he went to Sydney and the Oval and won the Derby, albeit on protest. But prior to that, he won the Rose Hill Guineas, and I always say that was one of his best wins as well, because a full field, fast pace, and probably nearly last on the corner, and one going away from them. He had an incredible turn of foot in the Cox Plate, and you know, I sort of truly believe that he'd be one of those horses that you travel overseas in this day and age. He was certainly good enough in my eyes to do that. But not getting away from the fact he did, because he went to Perth. Getting back to your story there, because he went to Perth, and I didn't go to ride him there. I stayed in Melbourne, and one of the great stories about him too was great, but not so great in terms that he had a bit of aversion to flying, and he wouldn't load. They had to push him out backwards out of the pallet, and he was brought back over the Nullarbor, and they had excessive heat, and he was well looked after at the time by Terry Ryan, and the float broke down. Terry went to a farm, I don't know how far he would have had to walk in the Nullarbor, to get water to basically save his life. And so he had an incredible career, because, you know, he could have well died of anything prior to that, to his famous Cox Plate win.
That was a seven-length win, of course, over Chivalry, who I reckon beat him as a three-year-old, beat him in the Tancred or something like that before he won the AJC Derby. But that Cox Plate win, if you're betting in the run, 800 from home, he was $1.10.
Yes, well, I guess he was. You know, I was in a slight awkward position prior to that school bend there, and anyway, he snuck through a needle eye opening, and it wasn't my intention to let him stride there. Far be it. But he just basically took control, and I was only a passenger. And I do remember thinking, if I get this wrong, I'll be looking for a new job on Monday morning. So, I didn't have many worries really. And getting back to Chivalry, yes, he beat him in the Tancred, and he was a very high class weight for age performer in New Zealand, obviously. And then he looked like beating me in the McKinnon and the race prior to the Melbourne Cup, and Dulcify wore him down on the line. He probably got about a neck to a half length up on me, and I reckon it broke his heart, that horse. I think he failed to win a race afterwards.
Really?
You know,
what was that like in the McKinnon? Course, you won the Cox Plate by seven, and then you're running in the McKinnon as a very short favourite, and you in the back of your mind, you've got to be thinking, I've got to look after him because he's running on Tuesday.
Sure.
So, was that part of it? I mean, trying to look after him as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. We had another good, courageous mare called Minuetto, who won some good races herself, and she was a pretty bold, on-speed runner. And Montreal rode her that day. She was sort of nearly the logical leader in the race, but she actually took a fair bit getting for both of us to get past. But I was very mindful of the following Tuesday, so I wanted to, you know, get him to the line, obviously, to win, but with at least effort, but I had to give him a few, and not excessively, but, you know, I would have loved to have won by about three lengths looking over my shoulder. I did ride him, took him for a canter on the Monday morning, and he was so bright in himself. I just knew that the race hadn't taken anything out of him. Given that, in this day and age, you wouldn't run a horse in the McKinnon, which actually doesn't even run out now on that Saturday Derby day, does it? It's the final day. But, you know, training methods changed quite considerably over the years. Here we sort of more race to a European style of a, you know, minimum of 2 weeks in between them.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.